Hodges of Henrico County, Joseph R. Pope, President Lloyd Jr., Council for Ohio, Joseph P. Rappasarda Jr., J.P. Sartoris, John D. Gilbert, Council for Appalachia.
You may proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. This case is about H.H. Hunt's vested rights and Henrico County's unbridled attempts to deprive H.H. Hunt of those very rights.
It would be a good idea for the sake of the recording if you would give your name as well.
I am sorry, Your Honor. I'm Joseph Pope, here on behalf of Lock LeVon and H.H. Hunt Corporation.
All right, go ahead.
Thank you so much. The record shows below that H.H. Hunt followed Henrico County's procedures for dedicating Dominion Club Drive. H.H. Hunt filed the subdivision plats on which Dominion Club Drive was depicted. It obtained approval from the county on at least 8 occasions for building the road to the Hanover County line. It diligently pursued construction of the project by grading and bonding the road and taking every possible step towards assembling the property and approvals necessary to begin construction of the Hanover section of Windham. And just when H.H. Hunt was ready to complete the road, Henrico County arbitrarily decided that H.H. Hunt could not move forward with the construction. It abandoned the road, and it crushed H.H. Hunt's rights and economic expectations. The trial court's decision approving the county's errant actions should be reversed for the following reasons. First, Virginia Code Section 15.2-2261F prevents the county from abandoning Dominion Club Drive because the road is an inseparable part of the final subdivision plats for Wexford and Manor Park.
So the vested right, even though it presupposes that the Dominion Club Drive would exist, includes the vested right that it does exist in the future and it will be not abandoned and it will remain a part of the plan?
It does, Your Honor, because it is part of a subdivision plat that was dedicated as part of these two subdivisions. And it was dedicated, and because of that, and by operation of how the General Assembly has created this remedial and curative statute, it provides that right so that H.H. Hunt can move forward with that construction, as it has moved forward with attempting to do this for decades by assembling land, by bonding the road, by paying tens and tens of thousands of dollars for purposes of bonding this road.
If there's like a rear guard attack, that this is just a hole in the scheme, you know, the vested right arguably to your bridge, but do you have a vested right to the presuppositions for the bridge?
Absolutely, Your Honor, because it is depicted on the approved plat that is provided, that is protected by the statute.
Is it a separate plat from Wexford and Manor Park? Is the road itself a separate plat?
Well, Your Honor, I think that's really the core of it. The county has tried to separate those two, but I want to give the context of how everything happened and also how the statute should be read and also how the canons of construction of this court. When two documents...
So that I don't get lost in your explanation, is it a separate plat?
Your Honor, no. These two things are one. They're one and the same. And the reason for that is based on the conditions that were placed. And this court has also made it very clear. And
I believe it was... a little bit differently. Is there one plat or two?
Your Honor, there's a dedication plat for the roads, and then there's a plat for the subdivision plat. Now, the subdivision plat also depicts the roads. And these two plats are one transaction, and they must be read as one transaction because that's how the county required us to file them.
Is there a difference between a plat, council, and a plat that depicts a road? You're confusing me just a little.
There are, to be clear, there is a plat that shows that is used to dedicate the road. And that was, so let me take Wexford. I'll just go the elemental steps here. Wexford. By an approval letter of October 26, 1990, we had to dedicate the Dominion Club Drive plat prior to or concurrent with the recordation of the Wexford subdivision plat. Now, the county wants to say that, well, these can't be read together because H.H. Hunt could have dedicated the roads concurrent with subdivision plat. But that argument itself, and even accepting this hyper-technical argument, the county ignores a March 7, 1991 approval letter. In that letter, the county required that before the subdivision would be approved, the final subdivision plat, H.H. Hunt had to first dedicate and construct the road network. So following those
instructions. What's unusual about that sort of a condition? Really.
Sir?
There's nothing unusual about a condition of that nature.
Well,
to dedicate roads before the development goes in?
Sure. I've seen this before, but the problem here is that they're trying.
Have you ever seen the obverse where you
there was test
where you build everything and then dedicate the roads?
There was testimony below, and I think that was one of the things the county argued below was that they can't be read together because the H.H. Hunt could have, in some conceivable way, have filed it the way that you said would be unusual, this unusual concurrent or one single dedication. But the way that H.H. Hunt has always done it is that there's this dedication plat, and then there's a subdivision plat, and the subdivision plat also depicts the roads. So there are these linked documents. And as this court has always said, that when you're looking at instruments like this, this court has said numerous times, in context of construction, in context of contracts cases, in various other cases, when you have two documents that were executed or there was some action taken at the same time on the same subject matter, they must be viewed as the same part of the same singular transaction. And that's the way these documents have to be read together because that's the way the county required them to be. So, step back and see what's happening here. The county requires us to follow this procedure. But then they tell us that we cannot obtain protections of this remedial statute, a remedial statute that the General Assembly enacted to protect landowners from overreaching local governments, because we follow their instructions. It's like taking a test and then being told that you failed the test because you followed the teacher's instructions. That's what this case is about. They pulled the rug out from under us, deprived us of this remedial statute's protections, simply because we did what they told us to do. These documents are one and the same, have to be read together. Think of it this way. Think of it as a human body. A skeleton, which is the roads, hold up the body, otherwise it all falls apart. Now, if I could just walking through, again, look at the Manor Park subdivision. Now, notice that the county is going to put up some demonstratives today, but I also notice that they're not putting up the Manor Park subdivision plat. And one of the reasons for that, Your Honor, is that on the staff copy of the Manor Park subdivision plat, Henrico County staff wrote, in plain black and white, wrote, condition number 2, the final phase of Dominion Club Drive must be dedicated and bonded prior to the recordation of the Manor Park plat. No exception will be granted, so plan your schedule accordingly. So, in accordance with the county's express directions, we recorded a 1C2 plat that dedicated Dominion Club Drive, showing it going to the Henrico County line, and then we recorded the Manor Park subdivision plat same concurrent with, maybe a few moments later. The manor, in the Manor Park plat itself, it clearly depicts Dominion Club Drive continuing the county line. So the subdivision plat itself, from which they wish to extract the road dedication plat, it clearly shows the roads, because it has to, because a subdivision does not operate without the roads. And then to take, and you know, the other thing is that the this idea.
Well, what about their position that you actually dedicated part but reserved part, and that was your choice to do based on a financial decision?
Well, that goes to the constitutional vested rights argument, and I can address that. I'll go ahead and address that now, Your Honor. That wasn't our choice regarding that, the reservation, in terms of the vested rights, was that we had, because of the very conditions that the General Assembly was trying to ameliorate with 2661F, because of, there was a recession in the late 1990s, early 2000s. We told the county, we're having these issues with assembling the properties in Hanover County and these other, there are various other issues. So because of the extraordinary expense that we're incurring for bonding the road that they require us to do as a precondition for the subdivision, we asked that the bond be released. The county refused. And that's very notable, Your Honor. That happened in 1996. And the county refused, and they noted that posting the bond on that road was a condition precedent for obtaining final subdivision approval of the Manor Park subdivision. And that's at JA-2140. Also, in 2003, there was another communication about the extraordinary expense that we were incurring because of the bond that the county says is so, it's so inconsequential. The bond that they required us to have that we spent tens and tens of thousands of dollars for. In that conversation in 2003, the county acknowledged that H.H. Hunt was still assembling the land in Hanover County, and they refused our request for some relief against this expense and said that we had to continue the bond because the extension of Dominion Club Drive will be something that is desired by the county. And that is at JA-2141.
Counsel, I've got a question about your constitutional argument.
Sure, Your Honor.
And I've got a fair amount of experience with statutory vested rights. And in a prior life, I remember when the statute was being amended in 1998, I jokingly said that there was an unbridgeable chasm, that the developer believes that his rights vest when he first looks longingly at somebody else's undeveloped parcel. And the locality yes, believes sir. That rights vest when you cut the ribbon on the completed building.
Yes, Your Honor.
And there's a gulf that cannot be met between
yes.
the two.
Yes, Your Honor.
That was in the context of a statute. At least with the statute, we can look at what the General Assembly did. With regard to your constitutional argument, what is the limiting principle? What is the principle that whereby you can't say, well, after 50 years, if we maintained a bond, that equals substantial expenditure and diligent pursuit. 75 years, 100 years. What can we grab hold of to say, okay, this is how we are supposed to interpret your argument in future cases?
Sure, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice, I wanted to reserve a couple of minutes for rebuttal, but may I go ahead and answer the question?
It's going to use up your rebuttal time, but I'm sorry.
Right. Well, Your Honor, this court has already, I think this court has already drawn a line there. And I think the court can find that in this court's decision in the City of Suffolk v. Boarding, Board of Zoning Appeals. In City of Suffolk, the court found that a party had diligently pursued the development of a project. And when it did, it focused on its actions with respect to the entire tract, just as you...
Let me say, I'll review City of Suffolk as your answer if you do want to reserve some time. I don't want to use it a lot.
Well, I appreciate it, Your Honor, but if I think maybe the best view would be just to go ahead, since it's fresh on your mind, to go ahead and address this issue. In that, the court looked at the entire... It took the realities. Maybe as the U.S. Supreme Court has said, whenever you're looking at statutes or really even constitutional rights or text, you have to deal in, you don't deal in technicalities and fictions, you deal in realities. So I think the city of Suffolk looked at the realities and said, all right, there is a tract here. The developer sees the tract, and as you said, they instantly see a vested right because they've laid their eyes on the tract. But what happened, the court found that what happened later was what created the vested rights. And what happened later in the case was that with respect to half the tract, the developer began construction activities on that half. And it was over a course of 14 years. They did, my recollection of the facts of the case was I think they did very little, if anything, to the other half of the tract. The county... later wanted to rezone those land bays that had nothing had been done. Because as you said, the county doesn't see a vested right until there's a ribbon been cut. No ribbon had been cut. So therefore there's no vested right, we can rezone. The court said not so fast, because there had been this construction, this ongoing, now finally there had been this regular, although not constant, events occurring over a period of 14 years regarding the entire tract. And that itself affected and benefited the development of the entire tract. So therefore, because taking those actions as to that one half of the tract, it found that there was a vested right to complete the entire development. Now, maybe that's the limit of where the court would go, but this case is so much different than Suffolk County. If that's the limit, we're in the heartland. Because in this case, we had been, if you take the entire Wyndham development, we have for decades been completing the entire project. We've been building houses. We have been expending tremendous effort in developing all aspects of this entire tract.
Justice Bibbs, has he answered your question? All right, your time has expired.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate it.
Okay. Counsel, I know you intend to use some demonstrative exhibits, and you're certainly welcome to do so. Why don't you get them all in place so that you're not ferrying back and forth from the podium?
Chief, would it be appropriate for appellant counsel to be able to see the...
Yes, it would. Mr. Pope, if you would like to move your chair over... Don't move the exhibit. Move your chair over there so that you can see the exhibit and any references that are made by opposing counsel. Do you want to do that?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, move a chair over there. Well, that's not going to let you see it. You're going to have to move on over here. But keep moving. There you go. Now, I hope he doesn't scare you. You may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Tom Tokars, and with my co-counsel, John Gilbody, I represent the County of Henrico and its Board of Supervisors. I'd like to begin my remarks by addressing Justice Powell's question. And that is, I want to show the court the separate road dedication plats that are at issue in this case. The first plat is the plat of Phase 1C, Section 1. And I'll direct the court's attention to the title of the plat is Dedication of a Portion of Dominion Club Drive. If you take a look at the plat...
By the way, if you have the appendix reference handy... I love demonstrative exhibits, but when we go back, we've got the paper.
450.
Thank you.
Yes, 450. What you see here is, this is the road section that's being subdivided and dedicated. To the right, you see proposed Wexford and Windham. There are no lots delineated, and if you take a look at the site statistics here, all it shows is area and roads, 0.837 acres. No lots being divided on this plat. On the second plat, you have Wexford and Windham, and this is interesting because this is the plat adjacent to 1C1, and you see that here in yellow are the roads.
Where is this found in the appendix?
This one is found at 452.
All right, proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. In yellow, you see the roads that were dedicated on this plat. So there's no dispute that in Henrico County, as elsewhere in the Commonwealth, when you subdivide property, you can also, with subdivision into lots, you can also subdivide and dedicate property for roads.
And you would typically do that at the same time. You would typically require it at the same time.
Typically, that's the way it's done, yes. Now, H.H. Hunt does have a different procedure, but the procedure that they've chosen to do is what brings us to this court today. They dedicated a bunch of roads. They subdivided the property into lots. Now, what's important, members of the court, is take a look here in blue. This is the 1C1 section of road that is on the separate road dedication plat. They chose, by their own decision, to sever the road dedication plat from Wexford. We've given you references in the brief to indicate why they could have subdivided the property for 1C1 on the Wexford plat. They chose not to do so. But even more important, in talking about this argument that the roads are inextricably linked, the section blue and green over here, this is what became section 1C2. And what it's very hard to read in the appendix, but I'm going to tell you what this says right here. It says future development. So what they did when they recorded the Wexford plat is they said, we're going to show you separately the 1C1 road plat section, which is going to be dedicated separately, and we're going to show as future development the 1C2 plat. This is a conscious decision by the developer to sever the road dedication from the dedication of lots.
Did I understand counsel to say you required them to do it that way, that the county required them to do it that way?
No, I must disagree with H.H. Hunt on this. When we take a look at the conditional plat approval for Wexford, one of the conditions is condition 17, stated that the road shall be dedicated prior to or concurrently with the dedication of Wexford. And so the county has said, as a condition, you can do it together or you can do it separately. If you're going to do it separately, do it before. And the reason for that is because under the county subdivision ordinance, you have to have access to get to your lots. You don't want to sell lots to people if they can't get to them. And so we require the roads to be dedicated to make sure that access occurs. So my only point here in showing you this is they have deliberately split these off. And I'll show you now the third plat. And this is 1C2. And the reference for that in the joint appendix is 451. 1C2. Once again, you see the row section right here. There are no lots being subdivided here. No lots being subdivided on Manor Park. They've deliberately done this. And the reason for this is in the record. What H.H. Hunt planned to do is to bond them and construct them separately. Had they dedicated 1C1 and 1C2 on the Wexford plat, they would have had to bond it and they would have had to construct it. So as a cost-saving measure, they decided to do it separately. This was their way of saving money on infrastructure. And you have testimony from Mr. Tyler, I think it's the Joint Appendix 852, which stated that we don't spend money until we have to for infrastructure we're not going to use. And what's interesting, of course, is this infrastructure in 1C2 is infrastructure they haven't built because there's never been any necessity for it. Does that answer the questions on the plat? I'll move on to the next question.
His argument, though, is the plat should be read together. And that is essentially a single transaction, that the investment platform that they use to make this entire project work contextually presuppose that they should be read together. What's wrong with that argument?
Your Honor, I think the problem with the argument is that the plats that were dedicated were separately dedicated. The roads were separately dedicated on individual plats.
Right.
And if you take a look at 15.2.2261, it refers to the individual plats. It says, for example, in subsection C, that when you have a dedicated final recorded plat, you have the right to commence and complete development and not have any adverse impact from a ordinance, rule, policy, or regulation. But your ability to commence and complete development is in accordance with the lawful terms of the plat. So what the General Assembly has done, the General Assembly has made the decision to focus on the plats and to say your rights are based on the plats, unlike in 15.2.2307, where in that vested rights statute, the General Assembly refers to a project, a specific project. They do not refer to a project in 15.2.2261. They refer to the individual plats.
So, Counsel, in your response to Justice Kelsey, you limited that to the statute 15.2.2261. Do you acknowledge that constitutional vested rights can go beyond what the statute requires?
Yes, sir.
So taking that same question and asking it in a constitutional context, at what point, I'm going to flip that limiting principle question that I asked of your opposing counsel. At what point does a developer say, look, we've spent hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands, a great deal of time, and now you've pulled the rug out from under us. At what time does the Constitution step in and prevent a locality from doing that?
Your Honor, I'm not aware. The parties have not cited any cases to any court in which this court has limited the period of time at which vested rights expire. The Attorney General has issued an opinion saying, based on a number of cases, mostly from out of state, that vested rights do expire. I would suggest to the court that the public policy of the Commonwealth with respect to vested rights is expressed in subsection C of 15.2.2261, and that would be a five-year period.
So, in other words, you believe that the Constitution and the statute are overlays, that 6 years, that there's no constitutional right that would go to year six or year seven or year eight?
If you accepted the premise that the public policy of the Commonwealth is expressed in subsection C, that would be correct. It would be 5 years.
I don't understand that. I thought the idea of vested rights is you own it. It's vested. It can't be taken from you. You can't just lose it because you don't do something. Government is not allowed to touch it because it's vested. How can there be some statutory limitation period applicable to the con law issue?
I don't mean to suggest that the statute sets the constitutional limit on the vested right. What I am suggesting to the court is that the statute expresses the public policy of the Commonwealth by action of the General Assembly.
But the question is, how do you by neglect lose a vested right? The whole definition is it's vested. You don't have to do anything. It's yours.
As the Attorney General opinion has stated, as other courts have stated from New York, for example, vested rights do expire after a reasonable period of time. The time that's reasonable has not been stated in any case of this court. But I would suggest to the court that you don't have to really answer all of the outer limits of what the constitutional provision here is, what the constitutional protection is. In this case, what you have is a period of time which is 27 years from the time of plat approval to the date we're here today. And whether it should be 5 years or 10 years or 15 years, I would suggest to the court that 27 years would be far beyond what would be appropriate as a limit on the constitutional vested right. That's my argument.
In the hierarchy of authorities, it's undisputed, however, that the Constitution trumps the statute.
That is correct, yes.
Well, I hear your argument as bootstrapping public policy of the Commonwealth created by a statute that somehow is imported into the Constitution. Isn't that just exactly opposite?
Well, I understand what you're saying, Your Honor. in the absence of any other case authority in this Commonwealth dealing with whether vested rights ever expire, I'm simply offering the statutory five-year period as one touchstone that is set by the General Assembly that the court can use as a basis for making a determination as to a limitation.
Well, I understand that argument as well, but don't we have to look to the Constitution itself to determine whether or not there is an expiration?
Well, I would think you would look to the Constitution, but I'm not aware of any constitutional provision that does establish.
But that's my point.
Well,
that is exactly my point.
Well, and Chief Justice Lemon, I would totally agree with you. There is no constitutional provision that provides a limit to a vested right. There's no decision of this court that establishes a expiration period for a vested right. And so in the absence of that, then one thing to look at is the provision in the statute which sets the five-year period.
I'm sorry, had you finished answering this question? The statute seems to give a right up to 5 years, but does Board of Supervisors of Louisa County have any applicability here? Because there, the court said a landowner has no vested right in a public road. Is this a public road?
This is a public road. And
so how does that case inform this argument? A landowner has no vested right in public roads provided the road is abandoned according to proper procedures.
Justice Powell, those two cases, which were road abandonment cases, the BEPCO case as well as the Louisa County case, both said there's no vested right in a public road. But I also want to address an additional decision of this court in 2012, Town of Leesburg versus Long Lane Associates. And in that case, this court said that no one can have a vested right in property that it does not own. And in addition, it said, it talked about the future expectation. And that case was a case where a road was shown on a town plan. It was the subject of a proffer. The initial owner who built on the property in Leesburg then sued to prevent a rezoning of the remaining property covered by the proffer and to require the development of the road that was shown on the town plan. In that case, this court said that all that the developer had in that case was a future expectation that the road and the buildings on the property that it did not own would be built as provided for in the proffer and on the road plan.
So the vested right in that situation presupposes something outside the vesting of the right, and if the presupposition doesn't come true for whatever reason, absent arbitrary capricious conduct, then the vesting never actually accrues.
Yes, that's correct, and that's our position here. There cannot be a vested right as a matter of law, because this court has said you only get vested rights as the property that you own. Under Virginia Code 15.2-2265, the General Assembly has said that when a developer, subdivider, subdivides property and dedicates roads to the locality, it vests fee simple title in the locality. And in this case, what we've got is ownership of the road by Henrico County. We own it. We maintain it. And yet, H.H. Hunt says, we have the right to require you, County of Henrico, to continue this road for our benefit so we can develop the way we want to in an adjoining county. And
but
I would submit
to extend that a little bit further. Your position would be that if you can't have a vested right in a public road, there's no constitutional question in this case.
That's correct, Your Honor. That is our position.
But doesn't it seem rather arbitrary to you to I may not use exactly the right words, but to allow a developer to spend a great deal of investment resources in something based upon a presupposition that's agreed to, that's assumed to be, that's recorded in plats, and then later just change your mind and say, we're just going to pull out the rug, as we mentioned earlier? I mean, there's got to be some doctrine of law that says that should be judicially reviewed under some standard. But I think you're suggesting there is no standard.
My time is expected. May I answer the question?
Absolutely.
Justice Kelsey, I think the standard of review, I agree that the question can be judicially reviewed. It certainly can be judicially reviewed with respect to the statutory vested right because of the fact that subsection C provides that five-year period against protection against adverse changes in ordinances, policies, and regs. if a locality tried to prevent a vested right from being exercised during that five-year period, they would certainly have the opportunity to go to court and challenge the locality's actions in violation of subsection C.
But year six, no.
In year, under the statutory provision, they would not have the right to claim the protection of subsection C.
Even under the constitutional theory?
Under the constitutional theory. Well, the answer to the constitutional question depends on, well, if there is no vested right, you don't get to the constitutional theory. But assuming there is a vested right, then it comes to the court's determination about what is a whether a vested right can ever expire, and if so, what would be a reasonable period at which point it would expire.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Call the next case.